Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Gluttony by Kay Webster, narrated by Alex Kidd and Amelie Griffin. Preface: The Elite Seven. Since 1942, the Elite Seven Society have created and guided influential leaders, molding the country into something better. This society was birthed by Malcolm Benedict II, who wanted more for Americans. More wealth, more influence, more power. Some leaders have the skills, but not the influence, and that simply wasn't fair, according to Mr. Benedict. He invested his own money and time to construct a society that bred the best of the best, year after year. But to be the best, you must be ruthless. Good leaders make sacrifices. Sometimes the sacrifices are hard, but the rewards are plentiful. Mr. Benedict made sure to indulge these leaders with their utmost desires. A devout Catholic himself, he designed a society that rewarded his leaders with the sins that were frowned upon. If they were giving up love and happiness and joy for the betterment of the country, they deserved something in its stead. Pride, envy, wrath, sloth, greed, gluttony, and lust. Choosing leaders for this society means that it takes intense focus. Only seven are to be selected, and the investments and time are showered upon the new seven chosen every 4 years. The predecessors of each group of seven choose people who fit the sin that will mold them into who they are needed to be in the future, what America needs them to be. This is after a detailed study of many potential candidates. The university's acting dean behaves as a liaison for the society, bringing the college applicants to the predecessors so that the selection may begin. The society members who are going out will bring forth a candidate that the society votes on and approves. After they are chosen, the initiates are given a token and an invitation to initiation. The initiation will be a test to their character and ability to do what's right for the betterment of the society. Once the initiates pass their test, they are discreetly branded with the mark of the society and are groomed through challenges during the course of their elite education to breed them into the influential people they were meant to be. Once in the Elite Seven, there is no getting out. The money and power are their reward. Should they choose to stray or break the rules, the society strips them of everything. Anything they once had will be removed. Opportunities will never arise. They will no longer have the support of the society. To this day, there have been no known occurrences of anyone from the society having to be banished. This elite group of people are what every young man and woman aspire to be a part of. While the group is a secret society, they are whispered about amongst the privileged folks in the country. Anyone who is anyone knows of the group and secretly hopes it's their son or daughter who are selected. For good fortune is showered on the family for decades to come. Prologue. God, 16 years old.
Mr. Goddard, you shouldn't have more.
Wendy, our house servant, chides my father. He smacks her hand, making her drop the spoon into the dish. She jerks back, shocked. I watch with disgust as my father helps himself to another massive serving of Wendy's homemade bread pudding, smothered in rum sauce.
I pay you to make the food, not to keep it from me, he grunts.
He swipes his thumb along the edge of the dish to collect the buttery sauce and slurps it off. Mom chuckles as she sips her wine, already feeling her buzz.
You know Four loves bread pudding.
Wendy purses her pink lips and narrows her eyes at me,
challenging me to have more of the same shit that will send my father to an early grave. Food. I smirk at her. I'll have more if I fucking want more. And to prove I can eat what I want and not look like my dad, I help myself to another helping of her homemade cooking. She shakes her head at me in disappointment before exiting the room.
How's Rhett, darling?
Mom asks absently, her southern drawl thicker the drunker she gets. Her brown eyes are glassed over and her hair is disheveled. She's lost some weight recently and spends a lot of time in the French Quarter with girlfriends. Something tells me there's more than what meets the eye going on with her. Fine, I grumble as I wolf down another plate of Wendy's spicy crawfish jambalaya. Dad's chair squeaks as he sits back in it. He's massive, and I'm not sure when it happened. One day, he was a normal man, then I blinked to find Jabba the Hutt from Star Wars sitting across from me. My stomach roils as I watch him lick his fingers. A sauce stain dots the front of his dress shirt, and I cringe. How is this slob the third richest man in the entire world? Doesn't Four have people to hold napkins under his four chins to keep from staining his crisp, white, Battistone dress shirt? Some jobs are even too low for the poorest of the poor. I sure as fuck wouldn't want that job.
Baxter,
Dad grumbles before slurping down his wine. The red stain on his upper lip remains as he continues.
You're going to be an adult soon. Answers like fine won't cut it in the real world. If you have any hope of taking over Goddard Oil and Gas, you need to get your head out of your pretty boy ass.
Oh, Four,
Mom chides.
He's just 15. Cut him some slack.
I don't remind her drunk ass I'm 16. I'll work on it, I lie, as I push around the spicy rice on my plate to resemble a hand holding up the middle finger. In reality, I'm counting down until I can get the hell out of this dinner and back to my room.
You better, Dad huffs. I wouldn't want to have to give all this,
he waves a meaty hand in the air,
to Wendy.
Mom cackles at that.
Wouldn't that be a hoot?
Dad grumbles and I bite my tongue. Dad isn't giving shit to anyone but me. It's the Goddard way. Each generation since Baxter Goddard, the first of many assholes, the wealth has grown, much like Dad has, and been passed down to the eldest son of each family. My mother refused to have any other children after she gave my father what he wanted, a male heir. All this will belong to me. Hell, some of it already does. I smirk as I think about my cars. All seven of them. My bank account is fat and swells by the day. Dad injects money as he sees fit, which is always. He likes it when I lord my money over my friends the same way he does over his colleagues. It's the Goddard way. My phone buzzes in my pocket and I take a peek at it. Rhett, I need pussy. You down to hit the clubs? We may only be 16, but money buys me anything, even access into any club I want. When Rhett and I go out, they treat us like gods. I am God, and Rhett's my naughty angel sidekick. Me, I need to get ready. Huayra and I will pick you up. He sends me a bunch of lame-ass hard-eyed emojis. My best friend has a legit hard-on for my midnight black Pagani Huayra. Dinner was lovely, I deadpan. We should do it again sometime. Mom offers one of her distracted smiles while Dad grunts. I rise from the table and make it through our massive plantation home to my bedroom. The mirror mocks me from over my dresser, and I glare at it.
He has the cutest cheeks.
Maven from fourth period is such a bitch. Always has something to say about everyone. She gives me shit since I won't fuck her. It's like she knows just where to stab. Right in the gut. I yank off my dress shirt and toss it away. In the mirror, I inspect my body. The muscles are slowly forming, but I'm not as lean and cut as Rhett. It fucking pisses me off. My stomach sours and I stalk into the bathroom. On a quick, bended knee, I force a finger down my throat and rid my dinner from my system. It's spicier on the way up. Fucking gross. After I brush my teeth, I throw on some shorts and head down to my gym. I spend the next half hour running on the treadmill as fast as I can, then beating the punching bag until the bones in my hands ache. Once I'm lightheaded and feeling badass, I shower. My closet is filled with Mom's newest prizes bought back from Fashion Week in Paris, but tonight, I choose comfort over style. I grab some dark blue jeans and a black t-shirt before sliding on my Alexander McQueen leather-studded combat boots. Mom will have a coronary when she sees me. Before I head out, I down a couple Xenical tablets my doctor prescribed, chase them with some caffeine pills, and head out the door. I've barely made it to the front door when my veins start buzzing to life. A huffing and coughing from my dad's study earns my attention. I catch a peek of him, red-faced and struggling to breathe as he tugs at his tie. Staring, unblinking, I wait for him to die. Seconds go by. Tick, tick, tick. And slowly, he recovers. Pity. With a happy grin on his face, he picks up his bowl of ice cream, covered in caramel sauce, and leans back in his office chair. He rips one off, his fart echoing through the office, and laughs. I will never be like that gluttonous pig. Fucking never. 1. God. Present. 2 years later. I'm fucking bored. These college parties get lamer and lamer. St. Augustine University in New Orleans, Louisiana, is just like every other school, filled with losers trying to prove themselves. I, on the other hand, have nothing to prove, hence the fucking boredom. I scan the room, looking for my best friend to tell him I'm about to bail, but linger at two girls making out. Nowadays, you can't get in the middle of that shit. In the 90s, according to all the movies I've ever seen, chicks would make out to get guys turned on. Now, they're just lesbians, and if you intervene, you might get a beer thrown in your face. I learned that lesson not once, not twice, but three times. Note to self, do not try to interrupt lesbians kissing. They're super fucking territorial over each other. Someone grabs my ass, and I drag my lazy gaze to Maven Hilton, who grins wickedly at me. She's changed since high school. The blonde-haired, blue-eyed viper got someone to buy her those bouncy tits. Tits I still refuse to touch or put my mouth on. I'm still carrying one hell of a grudge from 2 years ago.
"Looking good, God,"
she drawls out, turning on her southern charm. That shit doesn't work for me. I know, I deadpan. She giggles and steps closer, her giant tits rubbing against the front of my shirt.
"Confident,"
she purrs.
"I like it."
"Have you seen Rhett?" I grunt out, once again searching the crowded frat house for my best friend.
"Yeah,"
she mutters.
"He went this way."
I let her grab my hand and guide me through the too crowded house. She takes me to one of the bedrooms and tugs me inside. Some dude is passed out on the bed, lying in his own barf with his dick hanging out. My lip curls up in disgust. "Not him," I bite out.
"Ignore him,"
she whispers, her lips pressing to the side of my neck.
"Focus on me."
I start to push away, but she latches onto me. "Pass." She pouts, reaching into her cleavage.
"I could make it fun for you."
My brow lifts and she shakes the small bag of white powder.
"Coke? I'll let you snort it off my new tits,
she suggests, her lips curling up into a sinful smile. How about you get on your knees? Then I'll let you party with me. I reach forward and toy with a blonde lock of her hair.
Worship God. How very fitting,
she says as she pushes me into the bathroom, not bothering to close the door. I sit down on the closed lid of the toilet and unzip my pants. Her eyes are filled with lust as she sashays over to me. The pink, tight-as-fuck dress she wears leaves little to the imagination. When she's standing in front of me, she peels it down her body, her big tits bouncing out and available to me. They're nice, but I've seen nicer. She straddles my lap, and I let out a groan of annoyance. My dick, your mouth, I bite out. She laughs.
First this.
I watch with interest as she carefully pours a line of white powder over the top of one of her fake tits.
Here, God, let's have a little fun.
I've never snorted coke off a pair of fake tits before, but I'll try anything once. Even Maven fucking Hilton. I snort the substance, ignoring the burn in my nose and down the back of my throat. An instant headache forms. Fury rises up inside me as I wonder if she's fucking with me, but then a rush, cold and furious, surges through me.
Right?
She says, her smile wide and contagious. Her mouth descends on mine, but I bypass her lips to attack her throat. I nip at her salty flesh, and she lets out a moan of pleasure. The little whore rubs on my cock in a needy way. She'll be getting my dick, but not on her used-up pussy. I bite her neck, loving the cry of pain that rips from her. That was for saying I have chubby cheeks, bitch. It feels like a lifetime ago when I was struggling with my weight. Back then, I didn't know how to manage it all. Now, I have that shit down on lock. I eat, drink, and partake in whatever I want, then deal with it the next day. I'm cut as fuck, and bitches like Maven fucking Hilton all beg to worship God's cock. I grip her narrow waist and drop her to the floor. Her blue eyes flash with ferocity until I pull out my long, thick cock. It's hard and waiting to be sucked. She finds her bearings and makes her way closer, on her knees.
Take me home with you after this,
she says, her tongue darting out to lick my tip.
You won't regret it. I'll fuck you like no other woman has, God.
I grab a fistful of her blonde hair and force her mouth over my cock until she gags. Her saliva runs down the underside of my shaft, soaking my jeans. She digs her fingernails into my thighs to no avail. When I start to lose my hard-on, either from her or from the coke, I take to skull-fucking her not-so-pretty face, loving the unladylike sounds of distress coming from her. It keeps me hard enough to do my fucking job. She gags and slobbers and whines. When I start to come, I hold her tightly and make sure she has no choice but to swallow every drop. The moment my dick stops throbbing out my release, I let go and laugh at her. She stumbles back and glowers at me.
Asshole.
Goodbye, slut. Her blue eyes flicker with panic.
I'm fucking with you,
she whines.
Come on, let's get out of here.
I shake my head. You're not really my type.
What's your type? I could be whatever you want me to be.
I prefer my women petite, I lie. Not really, but I like to poke her like she poked me. Then I give her a wolfish grin. But your chubby cheeks are cute. I'm sure some nice boy would love to take you home. I stand and put my wet cock back in my jeans before snagging up the baggie of coke. And I'm not a nice boy. I leave Maven calling me every name in the book. All I can do is laugh. As I stroll through the party, swimming with preppy wannabe motherfuckers, I decide to just ditch my best friend without a goodbye. If he's getting some ass, I'm not about to get in the middle of that shit. I love the guy, but even I can't stomach his Romeo shit. Chicks eat it up like it's their own personal crack. Once outside, I exhale in relief. Normally, the New Orleans muggy heat suffocates me. Tonight, it's cool, and I smell the promise of rain. Since Rhett, or fucking Lust now, which is oddly fitting, has been initiated into this bullshit elite, he's been a little distracted. I promised I'd play the games with him, but it's not my scene. More like my dad's scene. Fucking cringe. Again, I love my bastard best friend. Sometimes, a little too much. As soon as I hop into the most badass car in this damn city, I can't help but think back to our elite initiation night. Rhett climbs into my blood-red Ferrari Pininfarina Sergio and inhales the air, grinning. I smirk at him and lift a brow. Should I give you two a moment? She's hot, he says with a laugh. Hottest bitch I've ever been inside. He pulls down the scissor door and closes it as I peel out. I test my hot bitch out on the highway, getting it up to 147 miles per hour in 3 seconds. The rush is better than any snort of cocaine I've ever had. Rhett hollers out in excitement, but I don't miss the way his knuckles turn white as he holds onto the dash. Sergio is a he, not a she, I say to make him squirm. He simply laughs and shrugs. Whatever, I'd go gay for Sergio. This car is everything. Only 5 of these were ever made. Dad owns 2 and I have 1. Rhett shakes his head. Lucky fuckers. Luck is for dumbasses. It's called money, man. You should try it sometime. He pulls his hand from the dash long enough to flip me off. I have to slow down as the traffic starts to thicken. This car can get up to 198 on a real track, but on highways, I can't get him up much more than 150 if I want to stay alive long enough to tell the tale. What are we walking into? I ask, shooting him a questioning look. He shrugs. I don't know, but it's a big fucking deal to be invited. They only allow 7. Rumor has it we all get a sin. A sin? I snort in a derisive way. Is this some church bullshit? Dad wouldn't ever go for that. It can't be. Just what I heard. I bet I'm Lust. He smirks at me in that same way that has women all but throwing themselves at him. I'm a fucking guy and his best friend. Dumbass. Those smoldering stares don't work on me. I bet I'm greed, I tell him, grinning wickedly. I want it all. He nods but looks away. It unnerves me, like he doesn't believe that's my sin. What other sin would I be? Certainly not fucking envy. Must be pride. That's the only other one that makes sense. You know, Rhett says, no matter how stupid this may end up being, we need it. I need it. You have all this money, God, and that's fucking awesome, but I need to make my own place, without my dad meddling in my shit. Whatever initiation we have to do, I'm in, no matter how lame it may be. What if it's not lame? I ask, my voice a low rumble. What if it's dark and fucked up? What if you have to break the law? I'm still in. If your dad is in this society, it's gotta be something important. You may not need this, but I do. Then I'm in, I say simply. I don't care about all this bullshit, but if this is what you want to do, then it's what we'll do, no matter the task. You swear? He asks. Even if it's fucked up and pisses the other off? I snort. You piss me off all the time. Nothing new there, Rhett. His grin is wicked. Promise on my baby boy. I promise on Sergio number 5 here that I'll do the task asked of me so my best friend can be a part of the big boys club. Asshole, he grunts. And what does that make you if you chose me to be your best friend? Fucking stupid. We both laugh, then ride in comfortable silence as I follow the GPS to our destination. Eventually, we pull up to an old abandoned convent. Are you sure this is where they lead? He asks, snatching up the card with the directions on it. Makes sense to me. It's creepy and has a secret society vibe for sure, I grunt out. And it also has the church vibe going on. Maybe we are given sins. I climb out of my car and walk over to the gates. They don't budge when I try to move them. The driveway gates are locked, but the walkway gate is ajar. You scared? A flitter of unease dances down my spine. I may not be scared, but I don't fucking like this. It's too creepy and weird. I bet it's all a joke to make us look like needy assholes, and if Dad is a part of it, I wouldn't put it past him. I blink away my daze and realize I've driven halfway home without really remembering. A cold chill shivers down my spine. I'm about to whip into McDonald's to grab one of their shitty coffees. My dad would have an aneurysm if he knew I slummed it at Mickey D's from time to time when I get the creepy sensation I'm being watched or followed. The cops are always on my ass, but that's nothing new. Sometimes I outrun the cops just to watch my dad get his fat ass out of his Escalade and give whichever traffic cop thought they could play chicken with a Goddard a verbal ass whipping. Money talks. The Goddard name screams, and every single person in this town listens. Instead of turning into McDonald's, I whip around a dark alley between two buildings. A pair of headlights follow me, slowing as I put my car in park. It's times like these I wish I had a gun. Everyone is always out to fuck over my dad, like they even have a chance, and it gets worse the older I get, because I'm his sole heir. One day, it'll be me with all the money and power. Someone gets out of their car, their shadow dancing across the headlights. I keep my hand on the stick, ready to peel out at a moment's notice. Tap, tap, tap. I expect to see some thug ready to steal my car, or worse, a cop trying to fuck me over. Instead, I see Lillian Griffin, a woman I've seen from time to time, meeting with my dad, and coincidentally, my new guidance counselor at St. Augustine. Mashing the button to roll down the window, I let out a huff. What?
Oh, Baxter, honey,
she purrs in a syrupy, sweet voice.
That's no way to talk to your daddy's friend.
If Mom were here, she'd cackle and tell her my dad doesn't have friends. Dad has tools. Tools he uses to build his always growing empire. Lillian is just a tool. God, I state coolly. She rests her forearms on the ledge of my open window, pressing her big tits closer to my face.
God,
she grits out, her facade cracking. Just a tiny crack. I have the urge to poke at her until she breaks. I'm turning into my father. That should make me cringe more than it does.
We need to talk,
she finishes, running her palm over my shoulder in an affectionate way. I turn and give her an icy smile. Talk fast. It's about to rain and you look like you'd melt. She's giving me total witch vibes and I wish she'd get her claws off my shirt.
So much like your father,
she spits out, no longer keeping in her venom. I simply shrug in response. Rain starts pattering hard, and she shifts from foot to foot, clearly uncomfortable getting her pretty black hair wet.
We can go to your place,
she starts, but I cut her off. Rain check. With my fingertip, I poke her tit until she steps away from my car. Then I peel out, ignoring whatever shit she's screaming at me. It starts pouring, and I laugh, knowing she'll be soaked before she makes it to her car. Dad wouldn't entertain a conversation by a witch with a sketchy motive in a dark alley, and I certainly won't either. Whatever that woman has to say...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?